Well, there's some questions the Bible answers which people don't even know that they're supposed to ask. So the most important of these is, how can I be made right with God? You know, most people don't even acknowledge this as a problem. But one question the Bible answers, which everyone asks, is, where did we come from? So where did this universe come from? Or the way one philosopher asks it, why is there something rather than nothing? Well, our passage this morning from Genesis 1 and 2 tells us why there is something rather than nothing. It tells us where the universe came from and why it's here. Well, the first sentence in the Bible instantly introduces us to the main character of the universe. So look at verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And this is a summary of what's about to happen in this chapter. So heavens and earth there, that's just a way to talk about everything. So what God's telling us is, he made the earth. So everything we're able to see, everything we have access to. And he also made the heavens. So everything we can't see, the things that we don't have access to. And the end of our passage this morning says the same thing. So look at chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. Well, in the final three verses of this passage, the phrases his work and work he had done are used six times. That sort of repetition shows emphasis there. That's what this passage is about. The main point of this passage is that God made everything in the universe, and he made it from scratch, and he made it by himself. You know, the Hebrew word for create that's used here in Genesis 1 is only used in the Old Testament for God. No one else ever gets to use that verb. God's the only one who creates out of nothing. And that's what our passage describes to us this morning, the process of God making the heavens and the earth. But what we'll see is that as we learn about what God made, we also learn about who God is. We can see what he's like because of his creation. So let's walk through these events. They're described to us in the course of 6 days in Genesis 1. So day one, look at verses 1 through 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and the darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Now, these first two verses are teaching us that God made everything in the universe. So the inanimate environment where living things could exist. But God's creation isn't finished at this point because of what verse 2 says. The earth was without form and void. The matter which God had created was void. That means it was empty. There were no animals or humans that were able to live in it yet. And the reason it was void is because it was without form. So the matter was here, but it wasn't arranged in a way that could support life. So it was like if you're cooking a casserole and you've got all your ingredients and you just dump them in a pile on the counter and just serve that pile of ingredients. You know, that's not how it works, is it? You've got to add those ingredients in a particular order. You've got to mix some things. You've got to cook it. That stuff has to be arranged a certain way, and God's creation was no different. So that's what God will do in the following 6 days in Genesis 1. He's going to arrange the stuff in a way where something can live in it. It can become inhabited. Well, look at the first thing that God does to solve this problem of the creation being without form. Look at verses 3 through 5. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Well, the first thing God does here is to create light. And it's significant that this is the first thing to happen. Because in the Bible, just like in our time, light is a symbol of goodness. And that's something we see over and over again in the Bible. God is good. So 1 John says it this way, talking about the image of light. It says, God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. So it makes sense that this is the first thing God creates to bring order to the creation. And here's the really significant thing about God's revealing of light on the first day. You know, the sun isn't created until day 4, But we have light here on day one. So where is this light on day one coming from? Well, it's probably emanating from God himself. And I'll tell you why we think that. There's a passage in 1 Timothy, and it tells us this. It says that God dwells in inapproachable light. The Bible teaches that when God reveals parts of himself physically, so when there's a physical manifestation of the Lord, that oftentimes light goes along with that. So when he confronts Moses, he takes the form of a burning bush. When he's leading Israel through the wilderness, he's a column of fire. And actually, we get to the end of the Bible, to Revelation, and it describes heaven in this way. And the city, we're just talking about heaven, and the city has no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light. So here's why this is significant. It's significant because God doesn't need the sun to make light. Okay, actually, the reverse is true. The sun needs God to make light. The sun's light is just derivative. It comes from the Lord. That's like the glory of every created thing. It's all derivative. It all comes from God's own glory. So he produces this light on day one apart from the sun. And remember, part of what light stands for in the Bible is goodness. And that's the first thing we learn about God from the creation story. He's a God of goodness. Look at verse 4. And God saw that the light was good. You know, we'll see that refrain over and over again in these 6 days of creation. God makes something, then he evaluates it, and he proclaims that that thing he just made is a good thing. God calls it like he sees it. And the things that God makes are good because he's a good God. So at the end of the first day, there's still all the ingredients of the universe. They're all sitting there together in a pile. But now we've got light instead of just darkness. And that interval of light to darkness will mark off a day. And time can be kept at this point. So if you were creating a universe from scratch, you wouldn't probably think of this idea of time. But God thinks this up. He invents this out of his own imagination, the idea of time. And this is the first step in ordering the universe. And that's something else we learn about God from these days of creation. The God of the universe is an orderly God. He's a God of order. So right off the bat, he creates categories. He creates light and dark, day and night. He makes a way to keep track of things. He's a God of order. We also see this orderliness in the way that God creates the universe, the way that it's communicated to us in Genesis 1. You know, as we go through these days, you can notice that certain days correspond with other days. So day 1, where he creates light, that corresponds to day 4, where he creates the sun and the moon and the stars. Day 2, where he creates the earth's waters and the sky, that corresponds to day 5, where he creates the birds and the sea creatures to inhabit the sea and the sky. And day 3, he creates the dry land, that corresponds with day 6, where he creates land animals and humans. You know, it all fits together for the Lord. In fact, your instinct to be orderly as a human being, you have that because you're created in God's image. Your dog doesn't care how messy the house is, but you do. And that's because the God whose image you were created in is a God of order. And again, we see that from this creation account. He's a God of goodness. He's a God of order. Well, next is day 2. Look at verses 6 through 8. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven. And there was evening and there was morning the second day. Well, remember what God's doing here. He's taking an earth that verse 2 tells us is without form and void, and he's giving it order. And he's doing this because he's making an environment that's fit for life. So that's what this part about the expanse is about. You know, it's not perfectly clear what this is talking about specifically, but here's what we know. So initially, the world is full of water. And on day 2, God separates the waters. So he creates this expanse, or sometimes it's translated canopy, or another way to translate it is firmament. So it's sort of like a tarp, like a giant tarp. And he puts some of the water on the world above that expanse, and he keeps the rest of the water below it. Well, verse 8 says, and God called the expanse heaven. So if we just had that verse, we would say, okay, this is heaven. This is where God lives. But look at verse 14. It's not quite that simple. Verse 14, and God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens. You know, the sun and the moon and the stars aren't in heaven, like where God is. You know, we don't have access to heaven. We can't see it while we're living on this earth. But of course, we can look up and see the sun and the moon and the stars. So something different is going on here. It's not as simple as saying that this firmament, this canopy, is heaven. But what we see is the same Hebrew word that can be translated heaven can also be translated sky. And that's probably what it means in verse 8. You know, he seems to be talking about everything at the top of our atmosphere and past that. So we can see this from verse 20. In verse 20 it says, and let the birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So boiled down, what we know is God created something to separate the parts of the atmosphere that are above us from the parts that are down here on the face of the earth. So after day two, there's light, meaning there's day and night. That happened on day one. And here on day two, we find out part of the atmosphere has been pressed up away from the surface of the earth. Well, here's day three, verses 9 through 10. And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. So God takes the mass of water that's covering the part of his creation that's below the sky, and he divides that water so there's land. This is the first time in the universe that there was land. He gives the earth a name. He gives the seas a name. And again, he pronounces that these creations are good. And then God creates something totally different. He creates something that is alive. It's the first living thing to ever exist in our universe. Look at verses 11 through 12. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So God imagines and creates plants. And there's no way we'll be as blown away by this as we should, because we're all familiar with plants. But try to imagine seeing a plant for the first time. You know, if all you had ever seen were inanimate objects, and then all of a sudden you see a living thing, this thing that is alive, that eats food and that grows over time. You know, it gets bigger. Not only that, but these plants self-replicate. So God made a thing that turns around and makes more things. You know, the seeds of these plants, if you walk through the woods, you see this. The seeds of these plants are oftentimes designed to be carried away. So sometimes you come across these seeds that have little burrs on them. They're designed that way so that as the animals walk past and brush against that bush, they carry these seeds with them. It's the way that God designed for these plants to be disseminated. It's amazing. Or these dandelions where the seeds blow off by the wind. They're designed in an aerodynamic fashion so that they get spread around so that more plants grow. I realized that not only did God design those dandelions with the wind in mind, but he designed those dandelions with four-year-old children in mind. Because I watched my kids pick up dandelions and blow those seeds. Now, those plants are designed to self-replicate. God made them that way. And not only do these plants self-replicate, but lots of them produce food. He talks about trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. So think about that. These trees make food. You know, I was talking to someone about this past week. Look at a banana. How crazy is a banana? You know, it comes in its own little protective case. And it looks so different from other fruits. And it's soft. And it's sweet. It's crazy. You know, don't even get me started on watermelon. If ever there was a fruit that seemed fake, it would be watermelon. If somebody let you try some and you had never seen one before and they said, okay, is this a thing that a person made or did this grow out of the ground? You would certainly think that it was something a person had made. It's so good and sweet. But of course, it's a plant. It grows out of the ground. Our God is a God of creativity. We see that in these days of creation. We see God's creativity through his creation of these plants and these trees. So he's not only a good God, he's not only an orderly God, he's also a creative God. Look at day four. Verses 14 through 17. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night and the stars. So God has created the sky, the earth, the seas, the plants and trees. And now he makes the sun and the moon. You know, we talked about this in day one. We know that light already existed. So why make the sun and the moon and the stars? Well, this passage explains it to us, the main advantage of those bodies. Look at the end of verse 14. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. So this is a way for people to keep track of more than just days. You know, up until now, day one through three, they had light and dark, day and night. You could keep track of these days. Well, now people can keep track of more than that because of these bodies. So you can keep track of weeks and months and years. And just so no one gets hung up on the fact that it calls the moon a great light, you know, it'd be easy to read that and think, wait a second, you know, that moon doesn't produce light. It just reflects light. That moon isn't a great light. The Bible must be wrong here. This must be a reflection of the fact that these men just wrote it by themselves and they were pre-scientific. They didn't know what they were talking about. Well, we see that the way that Genesis 1 was written, it's not written as a technical science text. You know, he's speaking in plain language, the author is here. So it's the same as when we would say that that the sun rises. You know, when you talk about the sunrise, well, we know that the sun doesn't rise, right? The sun is staying put. It's stationary. The earth is revolving. But have you ever walked into work and told somebody about the sunset and said, hey, did you see the earth revolution this morning? Of course not. You say, did you see the sunrise this morning? It's just plain language. People know what you're talking about there. You're not making a statement about the sun moving and the earth standing still. You're just using plain language. Did the sun rise? Well, it's the same thing here. You know, when you look at the sun during the daytime, you see light. When you look at the moon at nighttime, you see light. The sun and the moon, day four. Well, now we get to day five, when God creates the second type of living thing in history. Look at verse 20. And God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarm according to their kinds and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them saying, be fruitful and multiply on the earth. So God creates animals. Once again, try to imagine how innovative this is. You know, if you were watching all of this happen, the closest thing you could compare it to is a plant. And you'd be thinking, okay, this new thing, it's like a plant. It's alive and it can reproduce, but it can also move. It's not stationary. It can get up and move to a different part of the ground from where it was. And all these animals are different sizes. So you've got a hummingbird and you've got a whale. It's unbelievable. You know, if you're working from limited resources as a creator, it's not very efficient to do it this way. You know, if one of us was creating the world, chances are we would just make one type of animal and just make a whole bunch of them, but it would be the same thing. Or at least make several different animals that they're close to the same size. That's much more efficient. But of course, that's not the way God does it. God doesn't need to be efficient because his resources are unlimited. So he creates every kind of sea animal and bird that has ever existed. He's a creative God. Well, then we come to day six, and he goes on with animals. Verse 24, and God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. So God has made animals for the sea and for the air, and now he makes animals for the land. And they're divided up into these three categories. So creeping things are just that, things that crawl on the ground. So snakes and bugs and rodents and that sort of thing. It's the category that I wouldn't have created if I was God. The second category, you've got livestock. And those are animals that are given towards domestication. So animals that people have found easy to keep and train. So cattle and horses and oxen, things like that. Finally, beasts of the earth. And those are those animals that are not easily domesticated. So lions and bears and deer. This is the category that you hunters are very thankful that God created. And again, we can be amazed at God's creativity here. All of these animals are so different from one another. And yet, they're so different from humans and they're so different from plants. All of these separate categories. It's amazing. But it's the second half of day six that is the most significant part of God's creation. This is the part of the record of creation that's given three times more space than anything else. We know that this thing is significant. And it's just like if you ever watch awards shows, they always save the biggest award for last. And it's the same way here. The most important thing God creates comes at the end of the 6 days of creation. Because, you know, after a while, the person reading this story will realize that there should be something more important coming. Because we get to days five and six, and God has been doing all of this work to make this universe inhabitable. And we see him make these animals for the ocean and the sky and the land. And we would start to wonder, okay, is this it? He did all this work to give these animals, you know, animals that aren't conscious of God and don't have a conscience. They don't have any sense of right or wrong. He did all this work to create a universe for them. Well, then we get to the end of day six and it all makes sense. Look at verses 26 through 27. Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So here God creates another living thing. But this living thing is unique among all living things. It's a living thing like God. So man is created in God's image and after his likeness, we're told here. Man is conscious of God the way that a plant isn't. Man has a concept of right and wrong the way an animal doesn't. And that's part of what makes man capable to perform this task that God gives only to him and not to any other part of creation. Look at verse 28. Fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So the world was created for God's glory, but it was also created for our good as humans. He was making a perfect home for us. And Genesis 1 tells us that was God's main purpose all along, was to make this home for us. You know, there are certain scientific theories which assert that man was an afterthought. So sort of an accident. This collision of time, you know, enough time and chance. And that produced, sort of by accident, man. But what the Bible is telling us here is that that's not true. humans weren't an accident, that it wasn't an afterthought, that it wasn't by chance. And, you know, Bible-believing Christians, they disagree over the specifics of how God created the heavens and the earth. And even among our membership, we have people that disagree, that interpret Genesis 1 and 2 different ways. We think that's an open-handed issue. There's certain elements of it where you want to say, no, this is a flag we need to put in the ground. This is something we need to hold with a closed hand. But there's some openness there to how we can interpret this. But this is the part that's for sure. One thing is certain. Genesis 1 makes it clear that God didn't leave anything in creation to chance, period. It was all thoughtful. He did it all on purpose. None of it is up to chance. Humans weren't an afterthought. Humans were the main thought. And that's why everything else in Genesis 1 was created for mankind's good, which is what he tells us here. So think of all the animals that God created on day 5 and 6. Think about the benefits that humans derive from animals. How good are animals? We've been really helped by animals. This is what it says in verse 26. And let man have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. These animals were created for our good. Think of the plants that he created on day 3. Those plants are what let you breathe. You breathe out carbon dioxide, they transform it into oxygen. That's a problem we've never had to worry about because God created plants. So the second Adam breathes and exhales, there are plants there to turn that carbon dioxide into oxygen, to take care of them in that way. There's an article put out by a professor at Yale University. I saw it recently. It's called No Trees, No Humans. And that's true. God designed those plants for our good. We need them. Not only that, but we talked about this. They also provide us with food. And we learn here that they were given for us. Look at verse 29. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. Think of day 2 where he separates the waters. You know, there's another place in the Old Testament where God separates the waters. It's the Red Sea, so Israel can travel across on dry land. It's the same thing here. He separates the waters to keep us safe so that we have an earth that we can inhabit. So he puts that firmament up, and he holds the part of the atmosphere that if it was left down here, we wouldn't be able to survive. You know the pitch they give you on the airplane where if we lose pressure, this mask's going to come down and hopefully everything is going to be okay? Well, that's because we can't survive up there. There's something up there at the top that keeps us from being able to survive. It's pressed up. He does that for us. That idea that the earth was created for humans to sustain us, it's an idea that historically has been called the fine-tuning of the universe. So scientists continue to discover things that make it clear what a long shot this world is. What a long shot it would be for this world to be produced that's perfectly suited for human life. The fine-tuning of the universe. I'm going to mention just two of these things. And I'm not a big science guy, but it blows my mind away. And I think we can all understand at least part of it. So I'll give you two things about how the universe is fine-tuned for humans to exist. So in our universe, there's a perfect balance between gravitational forces and electromagnetic forces. Maybe one of you guys that's more given towards science can explain what those things mean. I mean, I know what gravity is, but I don't know how that works. But evidently, for life to exist, those things have to be in balance. Here's how much gravity would have to change for life to not be able to exist. This is how much out of balance it would have to be. If gravity was altered by 1 part of 10 to the 40th power. Okay, so 1 out of 10, but that 10 has 40 zeros behind it. If gravity was altered that much, we don't exist. Nobody's here. This planet wouldn't be able to preserve life. Here's the second one. In our universe, there's a perfect relationship between matter and antimatter. I didn't know there was such a thing as antimatter. Don't know what it is. But again, there's this relationship that has to be balanced between these things. So here's how much a variation would have to happen for no life to be able to be sustained. Here it is. 1 particle out of 10 billion. 1 particle out of 10 billion, and you're not here. You wouldn't be able to exist. This universe is fine-tuned. It was created for humans to live in, to preserve and to keep life. He designed this universe with us in mind. So you think about day 1 where God creates the light. You know, the less light we get as humans, typically the sadder we feel. That's a challenge about living in New England during the wintertime. It's the hardest part. I would rather have the snow and not have the sun go down at lunchtime during the winter. A little bit hyperbolic. I know it doesn't go down exactly at lunchtime. But that's a hard thing. It's dark a lot. That makes humans sad. Think about how kind the Lord is to give us sunshine. He didn't have to do that. But it's here for us. It's for our good. Kind of him to do that. Well, as we close, you know, we talk about the sun there and the light. In the first verses of the Bible, God was actually beginning the process of giving us another kind of light, a kind that's not a physical, material light. And what we see further on in the Bible, there's actually three characters present in the first verse and the second verse and the third verse of Genesis. So there's God the Father. That's the easy one to spot. So verse 1 says, in the beginning, God. And it goes on. God the Father. He's right there. But then there's God the Spirit. And we see this one in verse 2. It's what the New Testament calls the Holy Spirit. Look at the end of verse 2. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. So God the Father, God the Spirit, he's pretty obvious too. But then there's this other character that we would never notice unless God points him out to us. But thankfully, God points him out to us. This is the Gospel of John, the very beginning of the Gospel of John. And it says this, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Well, when John says in the beginning, he's using that as a formula to call us back to the beginning of Genesis, in the beginning. And he tells us that this third character involved in creation is the Word. That's what he calls this character. So when verse 3 says this, when it says, and God said, let there be light, those words that God is speaking, the Gospel of John makes it clear that is a person. That's a third category here. God the Father, God the Spirit, and this Word. And this is who John tells us it is. He goes on in John chapter 1. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. The third character in Genesis 1 is the third person of the Trinity. It's God's Son. It's Jesus Christ. He was there in the beginning. He's God's Word. He's the one that's producing all of this creation. All of creation was created by God, and it was created for man. That's the point of this passage. And the center of history will be both those things, God and man, in Jesus Christ. It's what all of history is leading up to, because God knows what's coming in Genesis 3. That's what we'll look at in a couple weeks. He knows that Adam and Eve are about to usher sin into this world, and it's going to wreck everything. And he knows that they're going to have need for spiritual provision. He knows that our biggest need isn't going to be our need for physical earthly life, but our biggest need is going to be for spiritual life. More than we need that physical light, we need spiritual light. Because the Bible teaches us that the greatest darkness isn't in the sky when the sun goes down. The greatest darkness is in our own hearts. The fact that we disobey the Lord, that oftentimes we don't trust him. And that sin is a problem for us, and it's how God's going to provide for us in his Son. This is what the rest of John 1 says. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the rest of the Bible is that story. It's tracing that out, leading to Jesus Christ, and then celebrating that, pointing us back to him as our only hope. Let's pray together.